A thing that looks like a police box standing in a junkyard. It can move anywhere.
Haven, concentrate on Sim. Give priority to the detectors and the navigation systems.
There is a corridor. And the corridor is time. It surrounds all things.
On display, I eventually had to go down to the cellar. That's the display department. With a torch. The lights are probably gone. So had the stairs.
Yours is number 6.
I am not a number. I am a person.
Welcome to British Invaders, episode 38. This is the podcast all about British science fiction television, and today we are continuing our discussion of The War Game and Threads. This is Brian from Canada.
And this is Eamon from England.
The War Game was a 1965 fictional speculative documentary that handled the possibility of nuclear war. It looked at a little bit of the events before and the situation before a nuclear strike, and then in depth studied what happened after a nuclear strike. And it did this very much like a documentary or news program, and it was very strong and powerful and effective, and it was also very controversial.
And then we're also discussing another film, also from the BBC, a film called Threads, which came out in 1984 and was a sort of docudrama that followed two particular families and another group of people through the events of a nuclear attack on Britain, and in particular, a nuclear explosion outside the northern industrial city of Sheffield, and the consequences of the attack on the people that we've got to know in the start of the film. And as I say, that was from 1984, again on the BBC.
In the first half of our discussion, we already talked about some of the stories involved and the production details of how they did this. So if you haven't heard that, check that out. And now we're going to talk about some of the imagery involved that was so very powerful in both of these programs.
Yes, because as you said at the end of last episode, Brian, both of these films contain absolutely sort of memorable, disturbing, extremely powerful images. I mean, they're too numerous to mention, but there were some that stuck out for us as we went through both films. So if we start with The War Game, I mean, I was particularly taken by this sort of documentary effect where not only do they interview people in the street who look directly into the camera, but also when they have the dramatic scenes, the characters, in a completely sort of naturalistic way, glance at the camera and look at the camera as ordinary people in the street do when they see a news camera. I find it incredibly powerful. It's almost, it's people looking at us from the past while these horrific things are happening around them. It's almost like the past sending us a message. So I found that quite powerful stuff.
That was powerful. And related to that was this very news style of the way they did the photography. This is mid-60s black and white footage we're looking at. And it was generally shot with a single camera that was handheld in the way that a news program would have been filmed at that time. So the cameraman would walk around and the camera would move around when things were happening or when people were pushing up against him. And it felt very much like a news photographer getting caught up into the action of what's happening when people are all around him. And it gave you a very sort of realistic sensation of watching something that was being filmed right out in the middle of everything that was going on.
And also very realistic is the sort of aftermath of the attack on this part of Kent where it was filmed, where we have this firestorm going on. The fire crews struggling to do anything with it, many of them dying in the process. And that was extremely well done and extremely disturbing. But even more disturbing is the consequences of that, which is the burns victims and the scenes on the hospital wards and doctors and nurses talking to the camera and describing some of the injuries they've had to treat. And these amazing sort of makeup special effects of children with burns. It is, as I'm sure you've realised now, it's all very grim and gritty stuff, both these films. And in many places, it's quite a tough watch. It's quite difficult to watch some of this stuff. Very powerful.
It's quite disturbing when you see some of these people who are the victims with the bandaging and the way that the burns were portrayed. It's quite powerful and impactful stuff. It's quite striking. Another image that they had in this was also kind of disturbing was the bucket of rings, because they would have these bodies from the people who were killed in the firestorms and the flash burns and so on, and they were basically burned beyond recognition. And as they were disposing of bodies, they were collecting the rings, the wedding rings that these people had on, with the idea being that they could later identify the people who had died by the inscriptions on the insides of the rings. And you see them putting rings into a bucket, where they have a bucket full of wedding rings that represent people who have died and have bodies that aren't recognizable. And all these rings are the potential to maybe find out who some of these people were. Again, quite disturbing.
Yes, yes, disturbing, and we keep saying it, very powerful stuff. And there was one little moment from the narration which stood out for me, where the narrator describes the shockwave that comes after the explosion and says, in this rather memorable phrase, that the shockwave of a nuclear explosion has been likened to a door slamming in hell. As I say, quite a sort of strange and memorable phrase.
And again, as we've alluded to earlier, lines like that were delivered in this sort of documentary style delivery. So it was, again, something with a lot of impact.
It's like somebody reporting the news, and it just comes across so dramatically.
Exactly. And another important element of the war game, in part because of how they were setting the film up and its purpose, and in part because of the controversy, was the mercy killings and the other shootings with the police involved. They described with the burn victims and other victims the type of triage they had, where they would treat the people that they could treat and leave the people who could go without treatment, and leave the people who were not going to survive, whether they were treated or not. And the people who were not going to survive were left without medication, in pain, to die because they had very little medication available for the demand and so on. And what they showed was the police aiding them by essentially euthanizing these people, by shooting these burn victims in mercy killings, because there was no way that they would survive. And it was quite a grim image. And as the show progresses later on, we have an even more grim image when we start seeing riots and people being killed and people being executed by the police for various types of crime and keeping order. The police are basically executing people. And this was shown in the way of, if we lose the structure of society and we can't, and we don't have all the normal supports, this is what we come to, and we have to resort to these things that we would not consider acceptable. So again, pretty powerful stuff.
Absolutely. I mean, the police shooting burns victims, and then the police and the military executing two looters. Remarkable stuff for a 1960s film. Completely shocking.
In the face of growing hunger riots, it is very possible that dwindling supplies of food would finally be kept as a form of bonus for only those who still perform the precarious maintenance of law and order. The result of such partial feeding would in itself be almost inevitable. On this day, the first food rioter is killed by the police in Kent. Later, as a direct result of this incident, a police ammunition truck and its contents are seized and its volunteer drivers murdered.
Now, bouncing forward 20 years again to Threads, 1984, there were also many striking images. One of the most memorable images was the image of the mushroom cloud. We actually see the mushroom cloud of the nuclear explosion. We see people who are outside, who are driving from one place to another, getting out of their cars and looking up at this mushroom cloud and reacting to it. And that was a very upfront, in-your-face type of image of, this is it. This could happen. They're actually doing this. And the reaction of the characters on screen was, they've actually done it.
I think one of the characters actually says that line, doesn't he? That they've actually done it. Yeah,
that's right.
And as you say, you know, the image of a mushroom cloud over a British city, it's just, very impactful, and very, very disturbing again. And then we go on to the aftermath. Again, we get very similar scenes of fires and storms and the consequences of the explosion raging across Sheffield. And we get this, a couple of moments stand out. One of them is this shot of milk bottles melting in the heat, which I presume they must have had to do in a recreating a furnace or something, because, it just looks like there they are, milk bottles just actually melting right in front of you. Again, I'm not sure that the film Threads had a huge special effects budget, but they certainly, again, the BBC did a remarkable job, because I think there's very few of the special effects that don't stand up. This small, brief image of milk bottles melting in the extreme heat, quite remarkable.
Yes, the heat flash of the nuclear explosion was a very dramatic event in Threads, and this thing with the milk bottles was certainly one aspect of that. There were also very disturbing images of bodies on fire, and in one case, an image of a person not only catching on fire, but the heat being so great that you basically see a person melt. This was a very realistic and dramatic looking image. I don't think I've seen anything quite like it elsewhere. And if I'm not mistaken, although it wasn't completely obvious who it was that this was happening to, but I believe it was actually a child that we saw burning and sort of melting in this way at the moment of the heat flash.
Absolutely terrible. And also, fairly soon afterwards, followed by this other image, as Ruth goes through the city trying to find Jimmy, and she meets one of the survivors sitting in the rubble and the wreckage, and we have this image of a woman holding the sort of charred body of her baby in her arms, and she just stares at Ruth, and because we get this point of view shot, she in fact just stares straight into the camera and straight at us. Again, like moments in the War Game, moments in Threads, extremely difficult to watch, very, very disturbing.
Yes, these moments of the period of the heat flash, which was a brief series of images and then some things that followed after it, were the high point, or maybe it's the low point, I don't know, of disturbing images. In Threads, it was really very powerful and very gripping, the types of things they did with that. In the way that in War Games, it was the images that came later on with the firestorm images and some of the images of the aftermath that we mentioned earlier.
And then we also get, through both films, we get a number of sort of images and moments which they seem to have in common, sort of shared moments. And I think it's quite clear that in part, Mick Jackson and Barry Hines were sort of influenced by the War Game when they made Threads. So we get, I think fairly early on in both films, we get the sort of unprepared household when the attack happens. And we see this scene quite similar, I think, in both times, where people trying to construct hasty shelters out of tables and mattresses and doors which have been removed from their hinges, exactly as was described in the various information and leaflets distributed to the public. But it just seems entirely sort of futile and ridiculous in the face of what's happening to them.
It was as if they were holding up a mattress on one side against the heat of a furnace or something like that.
Absolutely, yes.
Another image that was common in both of these was that of food riots, of the idea that all transportation and everything would just break down after the nuclear attack. And what we get are the series of food riots where people think the police or the government has food available, and there's this series of riots trying to get to that. And it had a similar feel and very powerful in context in both of those. And linked to that was also the police response. Had the police responded to these food riots and other things, it was quite dramatic, and people were being held back. And in the case of the War Game, people were being shot to keep them back. People were grabbing guns and gunfights were erupting. So really quite grim stuff. And then in Threads, the police were using tear gas on crowds.
And another sort of shared image or moment for both films is this idea that's sort of covered of some of the survivors either listening to music or in Threads watching video, but without any sort of response to the music or the images, or without any sort of comprehension. So at the end of the war game, we have a group of survivors and children listening, I think, to a Christmas carol on a record, and they all appear completely apathetic and uninterested and don't respond. And there's this quite powerful scene in Threads where a few years after the attack, a group of children are watching a sort of jury-rigged television and video with a car battery powering it and some old children's program on a videotape. And they're watching this, and they just seem to have no comprehension of what it is or how they're supposed to respond, and they just stare at the screen blankly. So there's sort of similar themes there, and quite an interesting little moment in both times, showing the sort of the effect and how the events have just changed people so dramatically.
In both of these programs, there was the idea that after a nuclear strike, people were radiation sick, people were malnourished, all of these things were happening. But almost more important than that was that people's spirits were broken. And in both of these, you see this idea of people en masse, everyone, just being of broken spirit and, not being interested in the music or the video or these different things. People were just not motivated and were just broken at that point. And there was another image from the war game of asking children what they wanted to do when they grew up, and they were all saying, "I don't care, I don't want to be anything." So that idea of the broken spirit was quite prominent and quite strong in both of these.
Mm. Yeah, so the images of the children in the war game are just remarkable, how they got the children to just sort of stare at the camera completely blankly and, with almost no response at all, and mutter these sort of responses that they weren't interested in anything, they didn't want to do anything. They didn't want to be anything when they grew up. It's quite remarkable stuff.
Now, when looking at programs like the war game and Threads, it's very important to look at the type of response that they had and the controversy that was there. Back in the 60s, when Hugh Weldon, who had commissioned the war game, which Peter Watkins had wanted to direct and produce, Weldon knew that it would be controversial, or he certainly had strong ideas that it was probably going to be controversial. And he withheld the decision for quite some time on whether it would be broadcast or not.
I think knowing that it was going to be tricky and controversial, he consulted with the British government, and there was a sort of closed door screening for certain members of the British cabinet, and a lot of sort of backstage negotiations and wranglings going on about this very powerful piece of film, which for obvious reasons the British government were not terribly keen to be shown on the BBC, and the BBC themselves, as you say, were having doubts about it.
One particular thing that was the center point of the controversy, what was most controversial, was the inclusion of police violence. The police executions, the police mercy killings, and the lethal police response to the food riots, quite powerful parts of the war game. This was something that the government and the BBC were not happy about having in this film. And it was something that Peter Watkins had refused to cut out of the film.
Yes, I think that's it, isn't it? Because they asked Watkins to make some cuts, in particular removing the scenes of the police response and the police shootings, and Watkins refused point blank to remove them. These negotiations behind the scenes are going on between the BBC and the government, and then it obviously leaked out into the press that there was this film that was controversial, and other people started to get involved in the arguments. And again, a familiar name to British invaders, Mary Whitehouse, who was then leading her Clean Up television campaign, heard about the film from a journalist and I think immediately wrote to the BBC and the government insisting that the film be banned, and deploring the terrible effect it would have on the public morals and public morale.
And she didn't just insist that it not be broadcast, but that it be banned altogether and not have any kind of screening at all.
Absolutely.
And she did this without having seen the film, right?
Well, yes, she hadn't seen the film. She'd only heard of it from a journalist. But Mary Whitehouse, as we know, calling for things to be banned without actually seeing them, that was fairly consistent for her throughout.
The War Game was actually discussed in Parliament and by the Prime Minister. And the Labour government at the time only had a 2-seat majority. The film was thought to have quote-unquote serious political implications. Some people actually believed that it could influence an election. So for these reasons, there was not a lot of support for this film coming from the government and coming from Parliament. So we had this highly unusual situation of a made-for-television film being criticized publicly in Parliament.
And in response to all this, the BBC, which had commissioned the programme and had paid for the programme, decided not to screen it and decided to put it on the shelf, basically. And at the time, and for years and years after, that was portrayed as an editorial decision made by the BBC, although more recently, as revealed on one of the DVD releases that we'll talk about in a moment, the British politician Tony Benn has revealed an actual fact. The British government ordered the BBC not to show the War Game. So very controversial stuff right the way through. And of course, the controversy just continued from there in a way.
Yes. Peter Watkins, who wrote, directed, and produced The War Game, he had initially said that if they didn't let him make The War Game as his next film at the BBC, his second actually, that he would resign from the BBC. After the BBC decided not to broadcast The War Game, Peter Watkins did resign from the BBC, and he did not do much work in England after that. I believe he did one film in England later in the 60s, but he did go on to an international career as a sort of avant-garde film producer, doing films that in many cases had a similar sort of flavor to The War Game, with this blend of fiction and documentary styles and a very raw sort of portrayal. And he made films in the United States and in Sweden and all over the place in different countries.
Now, although the BBC weren't going to show the film and they were going to put it on the shelf, they did release a copy to the National Film Theatre in London, who screened it the next year in 1966 for a selected audience, I think largely of journalists and people in the film industry. And it did continue to have one or two sort of sporadic showings, so much so that it actually won a prize at the film festival in Venice in 1966. And it continued, I think, to get a few screenings in cinemas.
Yes, it had this sort of limited theatrical release. And apparently, Peter Watkins himself had at least one print of The War Game, and in many cases, people weren't getting a copy to show at a film festival or an art theater. They weren't getting copies from the BBC. They were getting a copy directly from Peter Watkins. After this sort of very limited theatrical release that it had, it actually won the Best Documentary Oscar, the Academy Award, in 1967, which was something of an embarrassment for the BBC, because this was something that the BBC had not broadcast, even though they had produced it.
And it must be, I should imagine, the only BBC or the only British TV program we're going to be discussing on British Invaders that won an Oscar.
I'm not aware of any others. And it turned out that the Beatles manager, Brian Epstein, and John Lennon were both involved in a campaign to get the film broadcast. So there were supporters of this film, quite strong ones, and they were generally, in one way or another, connected to the nuclear non-proliferation and disarmament movements.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it became a sort of emblematic film for the campaign for nuclear disarmament, for CND. And as I said, the BBC had released a few copies, and Peter Watkins had a copy, and the BBC had licensed the film to the British Film Institute. And so it would still, over the next 20 years, get the occasional screening. And I think it was picked up by film clubs, and some of the sort of smaller art house cinemas would show it from time to time. Although apparently, if they wanted to get hold of copies, even from the British Film Institute, they had to get them from France by some peculiarity of the licensing arrangements. So they had to get them from a French distributor to show them in England. And I actually saw The War Game when I was at university in the 1980s at the University Film Club where I, you know, had a very sort of powerful impact on me. I suppose we touched on this before when we talked about things like the omega factor, that, you know, something that is banned almost automatically becomes more sort of interesting and controversial, and people want to see what was banned and why. So, you know, I think for lots of people who hadn't seen the War Game but who had read about it and heard about it over the years, we knew there was something there, and we knew that the BBC felt it was too disturbing to show. And of course, I'm sure, you know, university and arts film clubs up and down the country were trying to get copies to show to their members.
I think the fact that it was in such high demand and had so many small screenings over the years speaks to the fact that it was such a remarkable film. Yes, people were looking for it because it was hard to get and it was obscure, but people were also looking for it because it gathered this reputation of being such a remarkable film, which indeed it was.
Absolutely, yes. You know, completely a remarkable piece of British television history. And finally, 20 years after it was made and 20 years after it was first supposed to be shown by the BBC, the BBC finally relented. And in 1985, it was broadcast on British television for the first time to, again, quite a powerful you know, response, which I suppose had been heightened by all these years of not being able to see it and reading about it, but not being able to actually see a copy.
Motorcycle. There are no roads left!
Okay. All the people here will be dead already. It's completely flattened. Round here, 50% will still be alive, but here, they're as good as dead already. They've probably received a lethal dose.
What about here?
Oh, it'd be pretty heavy there. If the wind's still blowing up from the west-southwest, it's in direct line from the crew. Oh, 800 rads, 1,000...
Now, Threads was much less controversial. It was first broadcast in 1984. It was not completely without controversy because it did have some of these very dramatic images that we described. But on the whole, by this time, films like this were not something that was nearly as shocking as it had been in the 60s.
And in fact, after it was broadcast in 1984, it got repeated in 1985. And it was repeated the week after the BBC showed The War Game for the first time. And this was actually done as part of a series of programmes the BBC were running then, which were to commemorate the 40th anniversary of the Hiroshima bombing. So as part of a week of programmes about nuclear war and nuclear devices, they showed first The War Game and then a week later Threads. And as you say, both showings of Threads did produce some response. It didn't produce a row between the BBC and the British government, but they did produce quite a response from viewers, many of whom thought it was just about the scariest thing they'd seen on British television. And there were stories of young people and children who had all sorts of nightmares and distressing reactions to the film. And if you go to the BBC website about Threads, you can read comments from many of the people who watched it when it first came out in the 80s and the impact it had and how sort of lasting the memories are of seeing this this disturbing piece of film.
I think in 1985, when the BBC did their 40th anniversary commemoration of the Hiroshima bomb, I think at that point they had to include The War Game and they had to include Threads, because these were such remarkable and powerful programs that had built up a reputation. A TV event like that, you needed to include those.
It would be very difficult not to have shown them, I suppose, once they'd set on this course of this series of programs about it.
And in the line of the scariness of it and children with nightmares and the like, there were a number of complaints about it from people that were not complaining that it should not have been shown like we had in the 60s, and not saying that this was inappropriate for anyone to see, but they were complaining that insufficient warning was given, that they should have given much more clear warnings at the beginning of the program that, you know, this is disturbing, not for children, etc. So there were definitely people who were very concerned about that.
And a bit like with The War Game getting its occasional showings, I think Threads has had occasional showings, and I think particularly sort of schools and colleges have adopted it and used it, I think, as part of history courses and so on over the years, and have shown it to their students. I'm sure certain teachers adopted it as part of their teaching and part of, I suppose, their own political beliefs. And again, on the BBC site, you can read some comments from people who saw it when they were in the latter stages of their schooling or at colleges, and the impact it had on them as well. So it had a lasting effect, Threads, and it's still, you know, very well regarded as one of the most sort of powerful films the BBC ever broadcast. So we should sort of go on and discuss our thoughts about these two films we've been talking about, and I suspect we've sort of given most of our impressions as we've gone along. Again, it's possibly, you know, slightly off topic for British Invaders, but it is quite an interesting subject to discuss, which is why we've chosen it.
I don't think this is off topic for British Invaders, in part because Threads, with the groups of characters being followed over a course of years after the nuclear strike, Threads definitely, I would say, is science fiction.
Right. Okay. So very much within our remit, then.
I would think so. The War Game is more speculative documentary, but it is a fictional situation. It's also very much a speculative type of program, and I think it fits in that way. So I think these are well worth covering on a program like British Invaders.
I suppose, in a way that they don't have the sort of entertainment appeal of a lot of the stuff that we talk about normally, where we talk about stuff that's quite entertaining, amusing, almost jolly from time to time. And this, of course, is resolutely not. They are, both of them are sort of consistently gloomy and grim, and unpleasant, despite the sort of important stuff they're covering.
They don't serve as a diversion, as most of the other things we would talk about do, but they do serve as very strong reminders of the ordinary people getting caught up in large events. And they serve to be very thought-provoking, and I find they're both very worthwhile as things to look at.
They certainly don't pull any punches either of these films. It is quite unrelenting in a way.
That's true. They also serve as a type of historical documentation, where this is television that was made in the mid-60s and made in the mid-80s that shows us what the Cold War fears were like at that time.
Right. Yes, as you say, they're both pieces of history, aren't they? For many, many reasons.
Yes, they are. There's also a lot of political messaging in these. These both were sort of taken up by the anti-nuclear proliferation movements. Both of them speak to how disastrous the use of nuclear strikes could be, and how almost world-ending they could be. In particular, what they did in Threads, and this was a very 1980s type of viewpoint when the global stores of nuclear weapons were very large indeed. They talked about, yes, we're looking at what's happening in the north of England in Sheffield, but they talked about the idea that both sides were launching nuclear strikes and that they were everywhere. And I believe they said that the total of all of the weapons used was something like 2,000 or 3,000 megatons, and talked about how this was leading to nuclear winter effects and how this was really bringing an end to any type of civilization that we know.
So, availability. In the UK, in Region 2, the War Game was released on DVD in 2003, and it was also released on a separate DVD, which was a double bill with Peter Watkins' first film, Culloden. But unfortunately, both of those now seem to be out of print. So although you can find it online, you can only find second-hand copies, and the prices of those are quite high at the moment. Fortunately, it does seem to be available, readily available on the UK DVD rental sites.
There is also a Region 1 release of The War Game, which is still available. It's from a small company called New York Films, which puts out independent and foreign films that would not otherwise be available. So I believe it's only available from their website and from Amazon.com. It's available in the double bill with The War Game and Culloden. It is also available in a 5-pack of 5 different Peter Watkins films, including The War Game and Culloden and several others.
And then Threads, which is still available on DVD in the UK, quite readily available on Amazon, still in print. And I don't think it is available in Region 1 at the moment. I think you're looking at imports. Is that right, Brian?
That's right. It was never released on Region 1.
Right. So just on Region 2 DVD, but still available. But also, at the time of recording, it is up on Google Video. Now, we are not sure if this means it's in the public domain, or whether it is actually authorised to be up there. But at the moment, you can watch the entirety of Threads on Google Video, not in the best quality, obviously, but it is there.
Yes, if you know why Threads is on Google Video, and if it is, in fact, a legal and authorised copy, please let us know, because we would like a little bit more information about that. So we should talk about our recommendations on this. I think you probably have a pretty good idea by now that both of us were very impressed with both The War Game and Threads. They are very powerful films. They're dark and grim. There is very little else like them that I've seen. And I would say that both of these are well worth watching. They're not light and diverting things. They're very disturbing and dark, but they are well worth seeing as historical information and as powerful information about how badly things might possibly go when things like nuclear weapons are involved.
Yeah, they are, I mean, to use your phrase from earlier in the recording, Brian, they are both remarkable films. If you're looking for diversion and entertainment, they're probably not for you. And if you're looking for more traditional science fiction only, then perhaps not. But if you're interested in the history, if you're interested in Threads, which is probably one of the most terrifying television films you'll ever see, and if you're interested in War Game, which is a piece of television history, a piece of political history, it's just a fascinating document from the 1960s, then our recommendation certainly would be to watch them both, because they're fantastic pieces of work. But we must warn you that they are both quite a tough watch, and they spare nothing.
So, in summary, during the Cold War era, it was common to see films that dealt with nuclear war. In particular, these two TV films, The War Game from 1965 and Threads from 1984, both examined what would happen to regular, ordinary people during a nuclear strike and in the aftermath of a nuclear strike. The War Game was in black and white. It dealt with things in a sort of head-on news type of way and had a great political impact at the time. Threads was equally dark and disturbing and followed individual characters through this journey of what happened before, during, and after a nuclear strike. Both are very powerful films and well worth looking at.
They're two astonishing pieces of television work. They're probably the most politically significant programs that we discussed on British Invaders. And if you're up to the challenge, then we strongly recommend that you watch them.
You can reach us at BritishInvaders@gmail.com, and you can find us at www.BritishInvaders.com. We also have a Facebook group, so if you search for us on Facebook, you will find us there.
Next time on British Invaders, we're going to lighten the mood considerably, and we're going to be looking at Red Dwarf, a long-running science fiction comedy series that had 8 seasons between 1988 and 1999, and it was a lot of fun, and we hope our discussions will be a lot of fun.
So we get into solid space science fiction and solid humor at the same time. We did feel that Threads and The War Game were so dark that we needed to do a comedy in our previous episode and then a comedy in our next episode. So that's what we're doing. So thank you for listening. And this is Brian from Canada signing off.
Yes, thank you very much for listening. This is goodbye from Eamon in England.